Okay, so it's our lunar observance gathering. It's the new moon of early June. And I'm definitely experiencing the heat. Generally, when we have a period of heat, there's it's just quite natural to have a feeling of lassitude and dullness, and heat has that tendency to do that. And it's just important to finding ways to keep the mind alert and attentive and bright, even when it's when the external temperatures are warm. Comes to mind because Ajahn Khrundamo had just before the puja, I've been employing my efforts into trying to catch flies in our day room. And I said, "Oh, if you give a talk about effort and persistence," the warmer it is, the faster the flies fly. And it's just more difficult to catch. I managed to get 3 out of 4 that were pestering us all day. But it is a good theme of that sense of, effort, persistence, because we're, in terms of just living a human life, it takes effort and persistence just to get by. And especially as Dhamma practitioners, then those are qualities that we need to be really embodying and being attentive to. And certainly, you reflect on the Buddha's teaching of when the Buddha defines or describes his own teaching, and one of the ways that he describes it is that this is a viryavada. It is a teaching on effort. It's not a passive acceptance of everything, and it's also there is the need for right effort, and that sense of right being, say, just right, balanced, perfect in some way. I mean, it's in the sense that it's effort that is appropriate to the goal of practice, and that elicits the appropriate result. Because the Buddha's path is not one of trying to conform to a dogma or a doctrine. It is trying to effect a response to the human condition. And the Buddha, over and over, he keeps reiterating that, I teach only 2 things, dukkha, suffering, discontent, disease, and the ending of dukkha. So that and it's really important to make that distinction, because sometimes, I mean, our habit or our tendency, our cultural conditioning, we tend to measure things by conforming to a particular idea of something, a belief in something. And, you don't have to believe in suffering. You just have to experience it. You have to pay attention to it. You don't have to. So this is an experiential teaching. And whatever effort we make, say, that increases or maintains dukkha is wrong effort. And whatever effort we make that helps to alleviate or bring to a cessation suffering, dukkha, that is right effort. So learning how to direct our effort and attention, and of course It's, of course, effort is, it is, there is a context of effort. And in terms of how do, you know, how do we measure it? How do we experience, you know, what do we, how do we conceive of it? And it, it, this is where the Buddha is, or, you know, this experience of suffering is, we have to pay attention to it because, and the Buddha is, it's, there's, you know, there's two possible results of dukkha. And one is this confusion. You know, the, we have an experience of discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, and it just, you know, befuddles us and keeps us confused and stuck in unknowing, stuck in ignorance. But then the Buddha says the other result that is possible is a search, a motivation to free ourselves from suffering, so that there's this search for an answer, a search for an ending, a search for a resolution. So we have to pay attention to how do we stimulate that search for what is good and what is peaceful, what is free from suffering. Because that is what we need to rely on so that our effort, our energy, our persistence is focused in an appropriate manner. So that, and then as we reflect on this experience of dukkha, then of course it's important that we reflect on it in terms of quality or its experiential feeling of it, but then also it's, what's its cause? What's its origination? Where does it arise from? And how do we experience it? How do we experience a resolution, a cessation, an ending? And the most common way that the Buddha points to, I mean, of course, there's many different trajectories. Of course, the Buddha's just in the Four Noble Truths, the impulse of tanha, of desire, of craving. But then it's also, where's that craving keep landing? What are we actually, what is the kind of the locus that where craving coalesces around? What does it keep focusing on? And the Buddha says it's these five aggregates of clinging, the five khandhas, or the five upadana khandhas, these five aggregates of clinging and the Buddha defines our experience around these different. I mean, it's a way of pointing to how we experience the sense of the world and our construction of a self. And around the form, body, physical form, whether it's external or internal, and feeling, the feeling tone of experience, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, whether it's neutral. And again, whether it's coarse or refined, near or far, internal or external, it's just feeling or it's just form. Perception, the aspect of the naming and giving importance to things, the constructing of a concept of what it is. Like you see, you know, we look across the valley we see green, you know, and what our senses experience is green, but we look across and it's, it's a forest across the valley, it's the valley, you know, it's whatever we name it, but that's it has a label to put it under, and it's these are acquired perceptions. They rely on, you know, memory and association. The sankhara, the mental formations, are the thinking and emotions, and there's, of course, that's probably the biggest category of experience, but it's what the Buddha points to as, again, for all the variegation that we can experience of our thoughts and our emotions, this is a mental formation. It's a sankhara. Yeah, so sometimes it's easier to get a handle on it and say, this is just a mental formation. And the consciousness, the conscious awareness of the senses that we do experience, the sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, in order for the whole process of thoughts and feelings to arise, it begins with just that consciousness recognizing an object of the sense. And of course, these are all necessary functions of a human existence, and they're basic to our living. But what the Buddha says is a problem is the constructing of a sense of self, a sense of I and me and mine. This is me, this is mine. And of course, we don't just do that. We extrapolate from that, and it says we like it, we dislike it, we want it, we don't want it, should be this way, shouldn't be that way. And we get entangled in that, and we suffer because of it. So we carry around this I-making and mind-making. But as an experience, and the experience is one of dukkha, and the Buddha, and he gives a pretty stark image of the tendencies, and it's as if a dog were tied to a post, they just run around this post as far as the rope would go. And then whether they sit or walk or stand or lie down, they lie down, they sit, they walk around that post. And in the same way, our sense of self, we're tied to this attachment or this clinging or this identification with feeling, with form, with perception, with mental formations, with consciousness. It doesn't stray from that. And to be able to investigate and reflect on when we do experience that sense of me, what is it built up out of? What is it? And can we release? And it's interesting that the Buddha, the point of, say, freedom or liberation in the Buddha's teachings is not that somehow we through our practice of the teachings and understanding of the teachings that we're going to have perfect form or perfect body or perfect health or perfect young body. It's just we experience a body as a body. Feeling, it's not as if we've got to experience just to isolate out whatever unpleasant or neutral feelings, just that pleasant feeling. It's the experience of feeling just as a feeling that liberates us. We don't create a sense of... Because as soon as we create an identification, it's bound up with longing, with craving, with attachment, and we go through the whole spectrum of it should be like this, shouldn't be like that. Why is it like that? Why me? And we suffer. So that the ability to reflect on the nature of this seeing things as they truly are and realizing that in itself is the liberation. That in itself is the place of peace. And it's not in, again, not having, as if we could form perfect memory somehow, or have the perfect mental state all the time, have the most refined and beautiful consciousness all the time. It's just seeing, again, as this seeing things as they truly are. Because and the Buddha reiterates it over and over and over again, that there's the nature of all of our experience is going, as long as there is, we're fettered by ignorance and obstructed by craving, these two vortexes of ignorance and desire, the craving and the not seeing things as they truly are, we continue to suffer. But it's that seeing things in their true nature that gives us the opportunity and just see, whatever. And it's in that classic series of questions that the Buddha asks, is form permanent or impermanent? And we said, well, the impermanent, Lord. Well, that which is impermanent, is that reliable? Is that satisfactory? Is that pleasing? He said, well, of course not. Or is it unreliable, unsatisfactory, bound up with dukkha? And I said, well, it's dukkha. Well, that which is impermanent, of a nature to change, is not reliable, is not satisfying, is not a source of constant well-being, is that worthy of taking as a self? Is that worthy of identifying as an I, as a me, as a mine? And of course she said, well, no. And then the Buddha's, is this seeing things in their true nature and then being willing to relinquish, to let go, rather than forming some, well, maybe there's something else. And in the realm of what we could, say, hope for, fantasize about, maybe there is some permanent, refined expression of me. But there's, you realize, well, no, it can't be, you can't build something that is constant and stable and permanently satisfying out of constituents that are inevitably flawed and limited. And it's important to recognize that this is not the point of the Buddha's teachings is not a passive acquiescence to mediocrity. This takes incredible right effort. Sammavayama, right? This it takes this eightfold path coming together in a balanced and proper way in order to, because the point is always a point of relinquishment, of release, of letting go. And it's when the heart is willing and able and ready to let go that there is a fundamental transcendence, a fundamental release from that which we keep attaching to. And that is, and there's a certain element of, as the Buddha's saying, this is subtle. The point of balance is really subtle. The point of letting go is incredibly subtle. And being able to access, it's like in one of the chants that we do regularly, there is an unborn, there is an uncreated, there is an unformed, there is an unconditioned. Something that is experienceable, but is not created. And it's when the mind is ready to relinquish that impulse to constantly identify with that I, the me, the mine, but taking a position then there is a place of peace. And that's really, and the Buddha said, you know, this is another description. It's just, you know, it's beyond our logical constructs, but it is experienceable. It is a place of, and this is the place of refuge. This is the place that the Buddha called the island, the Nibbana, the ending of suffering. So it's it requires an effort that we have to pay attention to, that even when we're, you know, it isn't sort of dependent on us, a drive and keeping busy all the time. And it's also something that we don't need to be daunted when, just because it's hot and there's a sense of lassitude, that we can't apply ourselves. This is accessible all the time. That's that sense of the truth of the Buddha's teachings is always here. To offer that for reflection this evening.